The opinions on this show are ours and ours alone.
All information is for entertainment purposes only.
This content is intended for mature audiences.
So press start and come join our game.
Like my uncle.
It's not what like a, your un- no, uncle at all.
You're not gonna tell
no.
a story.
No. how perfect! How utterly perfect!
Welcome back to another episode of Waiting for Players. I'm Adam.
I'm John.
I'm Adam.
Peter.
What have you guys been up to in the week since we've been gone?
Things and stuff. Stuff and things.
Stuff and things.
Stuff and things.
So Daisy.
Stuffing things.
No. Just Daisy. Mostly Daisy.
Mostly Daisy.
So much Daisy. I literally played from noon to like 11 o'clock. No, 1.
We got off at 1. We got off at 1:30 last night, John.
Yeah. So that long. Like 13 and a half hours. That was rough.
I took a break for like an hour. I couldn't handle it. I needed some time to unwind before I logged back in.
While you were breaking, I was out there earning helicopters.
I know.
I was working.
The world was sad.
So
sad.
I did get a chance to play some more Borderlands with Josh.
Ooh, oh, nice. How's that going?
Good. Yeah, it's a fun game. We're not moving very fast.
No?
I wonder why.
The lack of playing slowing you down?
No, they're just busy man. Hearing it.
You know.
You are. No, one thing I do want to say real quick before we get into it, though, is a couple weeks back, I talked about XCOM Enemy Unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when I reported on it, it was on sale, and then by the time that episode came out, sale was over. It is back on sale on Steam for even cheaper than it was beforehand. It's only like $7 right now. It's like 80% off, and the sale I think is running for another full week at least.
Does
so
it?
Yeah, okay. It's quite a while. So you've got plenty of time to go pick it up.
Sale.
Yeah, it's the 2K sale. Yeah. and yeah, so go check it out. If you didn't pick it up then and you're thinking about it, now's an even better time to.
Dude, the 2K sales are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And historically, they've done well for me. Like, I wanted Spec Ops The Line, but I didn't want to pay $60 for that game. The commercials just made it look cool, and I was like, I really do want to play it.
Right.
And I was looking at it, and I didn't buy it, but then 2K had its sale $60 bundle, and it had that game in it with, like, 10 other games. And I was just like, see, now I can justify that.
And now I still got $6 a game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
BioShock Infinite is also like $7.50 or something.
I think it's $7.99. It's still $8
somewhere around there.
That game is amazing. That game is so much fun to play. If you're not going to pick up XCOM, pick up BioShock Infinite.
No, I never really. I only played the first BioShock.
You don't really need to play
the first BioShock. That's what I was wondering.
It helps a little bit in the sense that like you'll draw connections to things and. It'll be a little. You'll see things that you might not have otherwise seen.
But I could play it and not. Feel
oh yeah, absolutely not. No,
that first one I played, and I had no problem with it. Like, okay. The storyline is completely separate and everything, so you'll be fine. Absolutely.
Are there specific Easter eggs?
Yeah.
Like if you had played the originals or the first one,
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
You come in and you'll notice things.
Specific examples,
names on a door, for instance, that would make more sense or like tie into the story.
Well, and like there's one part in the story to where like. City in the first game, the first two games you're in is Rapture. Where you're actually for a very brief time in Rapture walking around, so it's kind of a little throwback. You're like, oh, look where I'm at. Well, and then you get back on with the game.
Right on. And so, yeah. No, I'll probably pick it up. It's $8.
Yeah.
You know, may as well.
As long as it's on Linux. Which I don't
know. It is.
Oh,
yeah.
Are both of them on Linux?
Perfect.
Both of what?
XCOM and BioShock Infinite?
I think so, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know BioShock is for sure. It actually just, I think like a week ago, got ported to Linux.
It's so much fun. Oh man, that game it's fun and it's really pretty. It's a really fun game to look at.
Yeah. Right on. Anything else?
Nothing for me, no.
Shall we dive into it?
Sure. I wanted to talk about, I don't know if you guys heard about what's going on with Konami and Kojima Productions right now.
Not a lot, no.
Well, there's not a whole lot out actually, mostly there's some sources and stuff, but basically, apparently, there was some kind of falling out between Kojima Productions and Konami over the way that, like, Konami's restructuring their company, basically. And it's believed that the studio is just going to disband after the Phantom Pain project, including Hideo Kojima.
Mm.
It says, the fallout led to the senior staff at Kojima Productions being restricted access to corporate emails, internet, and phone.
Oh, wow.
That's, yeah, I can understand why they would want to leave if they're just like, you're only going to let us see part of the information and things that's going on.
I guess apparently they restructured, like, the way the company works, too. So, like, the top guys, like Hideo Kojima and a few of the other ones, they wouldn't be considered employees of Konami anymore. They would be contractors.
So basically they could do whatever they want with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard something, too, about it has to do with, like, basically Konami just wanting to, instead of it being under a different studio, like, they want to get their name out more, specifically. Like, they want to get everything just more under their umbrella instead of being out through other studios.
Right. Which you can't blame them for. I mean, they want credit for the work that they're doing.
Right. I guess. To be honest, I don't really know too much about yet to really say who's right or wrong in there. Mm. I think the most screwed up part of it is they've gone back and taken his name off of all the cover art for Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, really?
For all the old games. If you go to their website, if you go to Konami.com and even look up like Metal Gear Solid 3, you know, at the top it would always say a Hideo Kojima game.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say that anymore. Like, they took all of that off.
That's kind of petty. That's like high school, like, Facebook
shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Not right. Giving him credit for what he's already done.
I unfriended you and untagged you from exactly. All my photos.
They went through and changed all of this art.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, right. That feels very junior high.
Yeah. And even on, like, the Legacy Collection, it's got pretty much all the games on it. You know, like, really? This is this man's fucking life work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a legacy. It really is a legacy.
They even changed the website. When you go to the Kojima Pro website, it redirects to the Metal Gear Portal.
Now. Oh, really?
Yeah. It was kind of funny that after all this started, there was a hashtag a Hideo Kojima game trending on Twitter for a while there. But I don't know. It seems like a bunch of bullshit. Konami. They released a thing basically saying that Hideo's going to keep on working with it until the end of Metal Gear Solid 5 gets released.
Right.
You know? And then...
because their name's still on it. So.
It implied that he was going to have some kind of say over it at the end, you know? But they're going to keep moving forward to develop a new Metal Gear series, basically. And they're going to look for their own new team to build it, you know? And I don't know. A Metal Gear game without Hideo is not,
right.
It's not a Metal Gear game.
It's his baby. He's got a very specific vision for it, obviously, which is why they've kept him on it this entire time. So to just switch teams over something that seems really, really petty, I don't know. I think it's a poor choice on their part.
I feel like they're definitely shooting themselves in the foot with this one.
Absolutely.
The rocket launcher.
What else does Konami really have now other than Metal Gear?
Nothing that springs to mind.
Other than something that Hideo had something to do with, at least. You know.
Well, maybe they're going to use this as
not
a point.
Not with any of their, like, hardcore franchises, anyway. Because Metal Gear Solid has a huge following.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I feel like fans might even be angry about this. And
oh, I'm sure a lot of them
protest
are.
Protest in some ways. It could be kind of a bad economic strategy.
Well, they're already pissed on the internet. So.
Yeah.
Well, Konami is like, hey... we're going to restructure our whole company, basically cut you out and make it so you have way less control over what you do.
Which is stupid, because
Well, who's going to accept that, though, either? When you already were working with a company, and you have this rapport, and then they change everything, and then they're like, no.
Yeah.
No. You're the little man.
Yeah.
It's messed up.
Like, I would definitely pay attention to a game that Hideo put out on his own versus something that Konami did. You know? So they're just kind of... they're screwing themselves over in that.
Maybe we should just get everybody to pirate Metal Gear Solid 5.
Okay. On it.
Well, Konami hasn't been a big name in a long time, like, for putting out, like, really...
Well, what do they have? Silent Hill and Castlevania.
And Metal Gear?
Metal Gear.
Yeah.
And I mean,
but back in the day, they used to have so much...
And I think all three of those were going to be Kojima Productions. So
they're obviously not now. And they're definitely going to. I mean, this is going to cut into the amount of money that this game makes when Metal Gear Solid further than 5 will make, because there are people that, if they're already mad now, when the first one gets released and it doesn't have his name on it and he didn't work on it, people will boycott that game.
Like, yeah,
it's going exactly. to happen.
Yeah, it's just a real shitty thing. And I mean, it comes down, it's one of those things, like, he created these characters when he was an employee of Konami, so they mm-hmm. own Metal Gear Solid and Solid Snake and all of that,
right.
you know, but it, yeah, it's bullshit that they're taking his name off of things.
No,
that's a step too far.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Taking away his credit for everything that he's worked on the entire time he was with the company.
Yeah. And one last real quick thing I have on this is, I don't know for real if it's connected or not, but Kojima, a couple days before this happened, Kojima put out a tweet that just said heading off, and it showed Snake getting into a helicopter.
Mm.
And some people are saying that that may have been just him kind of like throwing something out there.
Hey, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
That's cool, though.
That's pretty much all I got.
Yep. It'd be interesting to watch and see where this goes from here on forward.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I will be watching it for sure, and if anything pops up interesting, I'll be sure to mention it on here.
Where would he go?
He would start probably his own
studio.
Yeah,
my guess is
I don't know. Right. Yeah, well, I don't see why he couldn't still have Kojima Productions. That's his name, so.
Well, unless they own the entity.
Yeah, but I don't know, because it's still his name. Like, there's, I don't know how trademark laws in Japan work.
I know.
So, I mean.
I think if the name is owned by somebody, then he'd have to do something else. I mean, that's what happened with Prince and his record label, is mm-hmm. they owned his name, so when he wanted to do something else, he had to do it underneath a different alias.
The symbol.
Yeah, so he went with the symbol, yeah. But, so I imagine it'd be roughly the same, that if they owned Kojima right. Productions, then he wouldn't be able to use it.
Right, but if I had something just called Adam Studios, like, just Adam Studios, my name, like, no one else can argue that trademark, because I'm using my name. Like, I'm not using a pseudonym or anything like that.
That's true. Yeah, no, like you, I have no idea how the laws for that actually work.
Yeah, well, yeah, in Japan. Yeah. I don't know.
There are no laws. It's all Road Warrior out there. All right, so the game I brought this week was called Ori and the Blind Forest. It's a side-scrolling 2D, just kind of a little adventure-based game.
Platformer.
Yeah, it's got some RPG elements in it.
I wasn't really interested that it had a skill tree. That was kind of impressive for a side-scroller.
It is, because you can go so many different ways. Like, you only have 3 branches of the tree, but they do completely different functions.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them branches is all about your attack, and upping your attack, how fast you can attack, how powerful it is. The middle one is the green tree.
It does green things.
No, it's more like agility based, and then the third one's like energy based. So okay. It reduces the energy cost of doing things in the game, because energy is a big factor. Energy is what allows you to create save points, which is a big deal, because I don't know how many times already.
And to access your skill tree too, right?
And to access, you have to be near the save point to be able to access.
Now
your
you
skill
can just
tree.
Create a save point anywhere you
anywhere.
Want.
Anywhere.
I thought that was really cool. Everybody awesome, like, yeah. This looks like it's about to be hard. Save point. Like.
Or you go through it and you die one time and you're like, that's intense, and you save right before you go to it the mm-hmm. next time.
Yeah, but it's save nice. Point in the air.
No.
Oh, okay, that'd be
I cool. tried to jump and do it, but if you start charging it, you can't do it.
Oh, anymore. Okay.
You can do it as you fall, but it didn't even set off until I hit the ground. So you can't. You can't.
Well, that sucks.
You can't yeah, spawn. I know you can't. Yeah. Sorry, you can't spawn midair.
Well, I don't want to play this anymore.
Make an infinite death trap, like set one above a spike pit.
Oh, that is a good way of preventing that. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be terrible. Yeah, so you got to use energy to set your save points, and you can set them anywhere, but you actually have to remember to set them, or, well, that's a useless
Oops.
Feature. Because I've already done it.
Is there automatic save points, or no?
There are, but they're more like secrets.
Okay.
And so you can go to them and save your game, but so far I've only found one.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and so the map's actually fairly large, because you go through the first section pretty quick, but it opens up all the other sections you're going to have to play, so it's like basically more feels like a tutorial section than followed by the game. Like,
right.
Now this is all the stuff you got going on. It's really new. It only came out on March 11th, so right now it's 10 days old. It's Moon Studios and Microsoft, but basically completely developed by Moon Studios. Microsoft right. picked it up a year after they'd already been developing.
Well, they're publishing it. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's, so we're talking 10 days old. I'm having a lot of fun with it. The art in it is ridiculously pretty. The soundtrack's really, really well done by the, it's like Tennessee something symphony. Nice. They put all the music together. Peter got a text message. the Nashville Music Scoring Orchestra, sorry. And Gareth Cocker was the one who wrote the music for it.
Nice.
It's got a really, like, solemn sound to it. I'm sure in the different areas in the game, the music's going to change quite a bit. But the whole first area, it's almost sad.
It is. It's a little depressing. It's a little depressing.
Yeah. I almost shed a tear.
Well, because it follows Ori, this creature that gets blown from the spirit tree, and then caught by this super cute teddy bear-like creature.
Naru,
the panda-esque jiggly dude with the floppy
derby
arms. And when you jump, Naru's belly jiggles. And so I was trying to make him dance, like walk backwards, jump and turn. Like, it looks pretty good.
Nice.
Now, the animations for the movements in this are really smooth. He leaves this cool little, like, white streaky trail behind him.
Little tracer?
Yeah, not, it's like an after image, you know? It's mm-hmm. not very
ghosting
far behind.
Ghosting, almost. Yeah.
It's basically motion blurring, really. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a spirit animal, though, so...
You kind exactly. of expect it.
They're not even really
around.
Sure what he is.
Yeah, because he's from the spirit tree. He's the son of the spirit tree. He's one of its children.
Does he have lots of children?
It doesn't seem that way, because it was sure a big deal when Ori blew away. He lost him in the great storm.
Oh.
Yeah. The main bad guy, from what you can see in either the trailer or if you play the game, they introduce it after you beat the first little tutorial section. And it's this gnarly-ass-looking owl with glowing eyes.
Nice.
Dude, it's intense and massive. And it hates glowy spirit tree creatures.
Apparently.
A lot.
Wants to eat them. Probably thinks it's tasty.
And throws it away.
Yeah. It steals one of the other little spirit orbs and, like, flies from the tree and then, like, crushes it and drops it in a thorny ditch. And you're like, damn. Like, that owl is not messing around.
That damn thorny ditch. That's how I died earlier when I was playing, so.
Dude, it's a...
They get you.
Yeah.
They get you.
Oh, they get you a lot, because some of the thorns are destructible and some aren't, and the ones that aren't. I found one spot. It shows, like, the way it looks is, like, it's designed so that if you do it just right, you'll leap all the thorns.
Yeah.
I tried it, like, 20 times, and I hit a thorn every time, and I was just like, whatever, I'll take the damage. You find the keystones on the map in, like, secret areas, and then there's doorways, and then... You can see by the insert slots on the door how many keystones is required before it'll open.
Okay.
And you don't have to carry them. I mean, like, they don't do anything. They're up in the top right corner when you have keystones. And if you put them in the doors, though, they'll stay there. And then you can just keep bringing and adding, and you'll see them.
But they are one-time use. You couldn't pull the keystone out and take it to another door.
Yeah, and so, like, the first one you do takes one keystone, and the next one takes five.
Oh, wow.
Four around the center, and the center is the energy. Really, really fun, though. The art's really, really well done.
It's a beautiful game.
It's
visually stunning.
It's like very large package. It's 2.2 gigs for side-scroller. But, I mean, gives you an idea, puts in perspective how high resolution their textures are.
Right.
Yeah. The developers, they say it's a... They call it a gen remix of some old-school games, and they call it Metroidvania.
Metroidvania
is their inspiration for it, and so they were just really trying to push the 2D to the max.
Yeah,
and they did a really good job. Every background is hand painted and designed. So, like, 4 years is how long it took to put out this game. If you look at it while you play, you kind of understand why.
Oh, yeah, the animations are incredible.
Oh yeah,
they really
are,
and it's really fun. It's a puzzle game, which frustrates me, because right now I'm stuck. It's the worst part about a side-scroller game like this, when you think you know what you need to do, but it doesn't work, and then you're like, and then you're out of ideas. You're like, well, if that doesn't work, then how else do you do it? Because I thought I had to get
this... You gotta take a break from it, and then come back
exactly.
to it later. And then you'll figure refresher. It out right away. You'll be like, that was so stupid, I can't believe I didn't...
Well, that's what we're doing right now. We're taking a break. and then after the show, I'm gonna... figure that damn section out. The environment gets increasingly more difficult to deal with, which makes it really fun. And then it fully supports controller.
Nice.
And what's really nice about it is when you start it up with the controller, It says press any key, you hit a button, and it immediately changes everything to all controller commands, even the tips in game and everything like that, now show the Xbox controller buttons.
Nice.
Instead of, like, press left click to charge, and you're just like, what's left click on the controller?
That can be really frustrating when you're playing games that have controller support, but they don't opt to switch anything over.
Yeah, you have to figure it out, or set it up yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them, like, will have you set what key to what. But, yeah, no, I had a lot of fun. What did you guys think about it? You all played it.
It was really fun. I was really more blown away by, like you said, the sound and the visuals of it.
Oh, do you know what will blow you away? In the beginning, when Naru dies.
Oh, is it super sad?
Oh, man, it's so sad. Spoilers. It's like in the intro
there's
video.
There's no text, really. There's no, like, dialogue either. So it's really just raw emotion that you're getting from all these visuals.
Yeah.
And so Naru, I think, was trying to feed Ori, but wasn't able to get up the tree to get all of these, what looks like oranges, down. Mm. So he only finds the one and gives it to Ori. And then Ori wakes up and decides to go get Naru some food. And then he successfully gets all these oranges. And when he comes back, Naru doesn't wake up.
Oh, sad.
It's super sad, because then the arm goes down all lifeless to its lap, and you're like, oh, Naru, no!
Spoiler alert, by the way.
Spoiler alert, there are feels, is what it sounds
like.
Yeah,
there are feels. It's really well done, because it's not talking, like Peter was saying. It's just music and what's happening with them. And as you're carrying the oranges to Naru, there's, like, all these flashbacks about all the good times you had with Naru, and then you get there, and she's dead. And you're just like, no! No, really, it really is rough. Seriously sad for opening part of a game. It's what sends him out on his own, though, to go learn. Also, there are these weird skill trees that aren't... They're not, like, your skill tree. They're, like, tree stumps with with the energy of a dead tree spirit in it.
Okay.
And you go up, and then it charges you up, and you get a new ability.
Nice. And that's, you can see in the pause menu, right?
Yeah.
Are those the ones?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
You can see those in the pause menu, and it goes around. You can't scroll over and see, like, what the next ones do, which is fine, because in the skill tree you can. All the way to the end, you know what the abilities are and whether or not you want to go down that tree, and probably more so in, like, how you play the game. I'm just upping my attack a little bit right now so I can deal with some of these beasties. They got really fun creatures. Right now, one of the newest ones is this green... Looks like a little mini rhino made of rock.
Nice.
It's like moss on it. And when it sees you, it, like, charges up and then starts rolling. And then gets pretty intense after
rude.
That. They explode, too.
Oh, they're really rude.
They're suicide rhino armadillos. It's pretty much exactly what they are.
And they affect the environment. Because in the first area that you're in, there's a kind of a rhino-esque charging animal that you have to use to destroy a wall that's behind you.
Yep.
How many different environments are there? Because that's what really changes with the, like, the background, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, like, how many areas are you going to go to?
Yeah.
Four.
Okay.
Because you have to go to the four energies. It was, like, water.
Gotcha, okay. Warmth.
Like, the things, the balance. The tree used to balance everything, and it revives Ori and uses its power. So now you have to go restore the balance.
On your own? All manual-like?
Mm-hmm. Water originates at the top of a giant tree.
Well, of course.
Duh.
Who didn't know that?
Science. Science.
No, and there's specifically in the trailer, the volcano levels look really intense.
Nice.
Like, the environment is like really rough looking, and it has some pretty intense music, and it's got the little dude. He's so cute. Ori is like the cutest little creature
ever. And I love
ever.
The way he moves around. Like, it's not just one jump animation. It's like you jump once and it's a normal jump, and then if you jump again, as soon as you hit the ground, he does like a fun little cartwheel as he flies through the air. And like
a side flip.
Yeah. It's just an adorable little imp.
A McTwisty.
Bumbling around.
You know, that's the real name.
A McTwisty?
No, probably not. Yeah, no, it's a really fun game. It's $20 on Steam. Adam will never get to play it again because it's not Linux. Probably thank Microsoft.
I thought you were talking about me, and I was like, why?
Oh, Peter.
Fuck.
Unity Engine.
I fucking knew it. Well, see, that's another. That's what Microsoft does, though, because they have the Unity Engine for Grow Home. And like I was saying before, it's like the same thing with this game. They have the capability of putting it out on all platforms.
Right.
You know, that, you know, are within its hardware spectrum, but they're not going to do it because... They're assholes.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're
chumps. Well, because it's also available on Xbox One and 360 in the live marketplace, so...
There's a ton of games on Unity right now, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
It just gets bigger.
And getting this is bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
This is a really good example of what Unity can do, because...
It's amazing.
It's a beautiful game with really good physics and, like, movement and everything.
It's one of the best-looking games I've seen in a while, and it's a side-scroller, which should tell you guys something. Like, it looks phenomenal.
Yeah, they wanted it to give you the same feeling that, like, playing Zelda back in the day, or Metroid, or something. They said they wanted to... They said those were all really well done, like, visually, in their eyes, perfect, the developers were saying. And they just wanted to bring that back.
Nice.
Moon Studios hasn't done a whole lot, but they've got more on the way, which is kind of cool.
Games like this one?
Well, they did a first-person shooter as their first game.
Interesting.
And then this is their second one, and it took them 4 years.
Wow.
And these were artists all over the world. This wasn't just, like, one thing. You know? This was, like, a big collaboration, is what Moon Studios does.
Yeah, when you hand-paint each background.
Scene? It's, yeah. Gets intense.
Yeah. So that's it. Ori and the Blind Forest, $20 on Steam. Pick it up if you like side-scrollers. If not, well, sucks to be you.
Wow.
Well, dude, it's... side-scrollers are some of the funnest types of games to play.
They can,
I mean, because that's what I grew up playing
originally. Oh, yeah.
You know? And so there's just a big feeling of nostalgia when you play stuff like this.
Well, and not only that, but one of the appeals to side-scrollers, for me at least, is when I sit down to play a side-scroller, I know I'm not dedicating to myself to some huge game that's going to take a lot of time to play. Like, it's very easy to pick up and put down a side-scroller, as opposed to trying to play through something a lot more immersive like Skyrim, to where if you want to... You know, have any fun playing that? You need to sit down for a couple of hours, as opposed to 30, 45 minutes.
Playing that. Actually, no. My biggest problem with Skyrim is the fact that I am too ADD for such an open world game that makes you follow the quest. Like, oh, follow the quest if you want to, and I'm just like, haha, chickens. Ooh, I stole a horse. Like, you know, like that game GTA. Derails me.
GTA.
Yeah, GTA Skyrim style. That's how I roll. All right. So, Adam, what did you bring this week?
This week I brought something that is nothing like your game at all, actually.
It's so 3D.
It's a first-person game. It's called Subnautica. It's published by Unknown Worlds Entertainment, and it's in early access right now. You can pick it up for $20 on Steam. It's going to be like Minecraft, where the farther through development it goes, the more expensive it will get. So if it's something you're interested in and you want to pick it up, now's the time to get it. And it's basically what it is. Have you guys ever played any games like The Forest or there's...
Is The Forest the fucked up horror one?
It is, or even 7 Days to Die or...
I played 7 Days to Die. Stranded, 7 Days to Die has gotten better.
It's Stranded Deep is another game that's really similar to this.
What was the last one?
Stranded Deep. Stranded Deep, you're...
Oh, I have. I own that game.
Oh, do you? Okay, so this is very similar to that, which is, it's an open-world survival.
That happens, guys.
Oh, it's that's the lawn mower. Neighbor's mowing the lawn. It's springtime now, so almost.
It's close enough.
Is it now?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, it feels like it today.
It is super nice.
Yeah, because it rained and was sunny at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Washington.
But with this game, it is an open-world survival kind of sandbox game, similar to Minecraft, where there's building and resources, but it looks a lot better than that. And with this game, it's the very brief storyline that the game opens with is humans have started to colonize other planets, and they send out terraforming ships to make sure the planet's planet is fine. You're on one of these ships, the ship crash lands into a ocean world, so there's no land at all, and you're the only survivor, and you just have a tiny little escape pod, a crafting table, and a storage box, and you have to survive, get food, build a base, build different vehicles, build submarines.
Nice.
Are you still going to terraform the planet?
That it doesn't really get into. I think it's just kind of like, this is why you're here, now have fun type of thing. As far as right now, there's not any more storyline so far.
Right.
But one thing that I thought was really cool is it's all underwater, so while you're trying to scavenge for materials, you have to keep track of, you only have 40 seconds of breath before you have to resurface, so you can't get too deep. But you can build underwater bases. The more materials you grind up and everything, you can eventually build different sized submarines, explore deeper underwater. There's all kinds of different animal life and plant life to interact with. The deeper you go, the bigger the monsters and
that's
animal
awesome.
Life gets.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know if you guys remember Star Wars Episode 1 very well.
Yeah.
But when they're down in their submarine and there's just huge,
going
giant...
through the planet core.
Mm-hmm. And while they're doing that, there are those huge, giant sea monsters. Well, the farther you get down in this game, you start to come across monsters that are that big and that massive. It was really fun. I was playing it for a little bit today.
Release the Kraken!
It is kind of terrifying because not only are you underwater and you have to hold your breath, it's... Well, I mean, not in real life. You can breathe normally. But your character has to hold their breath.
That's a fun way to help build up your breath, though, as you play. Every time you go under, just no more air for you.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's like 360 degrees of danger. Like, you could be gathering underwater mushrooms in front of you, and then, boom, shark underneath. And you're just like... So there's a lot of that. It's, I don't know, it was really, really fun to play. And then with your submarines, like, you can get hull damage. So you have to, like, keep up on everything and maintain everything. And it's, I don't know, yeah. It seemed really fun. If you're into those kind of survival open-world games,
well, like, so you have the crashed ship in the ocean. What happened when you tried to get close to it?
Oh, yeah, so when you first start the game, you can see the ship you were on crash into it. And I was like, I'm going to swim over to it and see what's going on. And after you get so close, you start getting radiation poisoning.
It says radiation detected, and you're just like, and you can hear a Geiger counter.
Yeah, and then your food starts dropping really fast because you have to eat and drink. And that's one thing is, like, you're on an ocean world, but you have to drink fresh water. Mm. And I didn't get to a point yet to where I had to rehydrate myself, but that's going to be really, really interesting.
It's going to be like Water World, where you pees into a little device.
And you have to purify it. Yeah.
Distill it.
But, I mean, yeah, it's if you're into those survival games like that, it's a lot of fun. You should check it out. It's only $20. And real quick before I'm done, it is set up for the Oculus Rift.
That would be so weird.
That would be cool.
The setup was really easy. Like, when I launched it, it was launch direct to Oculus Rift or launch just the game. And so, like, it seems like it already has all the setup and everything done, so you just have to launch one instead of the other, and you're good to go.
Nice.
I can't imagine what swimming would be like. That's going to be so weird.
I feel like when you're on the surface, maybe not so much underwater, but on the surface, I feel like that could be a little nauseating with the guy, like...
Oh, yeah.
And the waves in your face, like...
But, I mean, yeah, there's a lot you can do. Like, you can, as you're building your base, you can pump an air tube down to somewhere you're exploring, so you just have to swim back to the air tube as air bubbles pop out to get more breath, and then continue to explore, nice. Or you can do it in
different sizes. Is it procedural?
What do you mean?
Oh, the world?
No, it's... Maybe? I don't know. I didn't see anything on it.
It didn't look procedurally generated, but that doesn't mean that it's not.
I mean, it very well could be. There could be a few things that aren't, but everything else is just... But yeah, I mean, it was really fun. It's definitely going to be a great time killer. I will be sinking.
How far down can you go? Like, is that the big deal? Is
the
going
bottom?
Further depth?
Yeah.
No, because I think that's the like that's pressure. The part that interests me the most is like exploring further down. And stuff.
I didn't when I was playing today. I didn't get very far down, just as far as I could swim, holding my breath, because I'm still mining materials to make a submarine.
Yeah.
But in the 4 or 5 different videos that I watched of it, I mean, you can take your submarines pretty damn deep and. It's cool because, like, once you build a big one, your little ones will dock into it. So you can drive your big submarine around, and then you get to, like, a cavern.
What?
You can go hop in your little one and then go explore.
Is this game multiplayer?
Right now, no. I really...
that'd be so cool.
I would be shocked if they didn't set up some sort of multiplayer, like how Minecraft is, where you're all just playing on the same world. I mean, it feels like it should. It really does. So but, if they never do that, I'd be really disappointed.
I think what Adam was asking is there, like, pressure, like, hull pressure, like, how deep your sub can actually go without being, like, crushed?
That I didn't see if there's anything like that. I mean, it is very futuristic, so I'd imagine that they're just going to kind of be like, your materials can withstand all the depths.
Yeah. No, I was actually just wondering how deep you could go, literally.
Like,
if there's a wall, like, you know...
Well, what they could
so
do
deep,
is just
or
never...
Or if they just keep going, like, the further you go, the more shit you discover.
It would be really easy for them to just get, you know, just keep making it. Essentially, they just put this really dark water that you can't pass because you don't have the stuff yet, and then just after that, continue authoring the map, and then release it later. So, I mean, if they do it right, I mean,
that
really,
could
it could
cool,
be
yeah.
nearly infinite.
Definitely.
But even where it's at right now, you can take a submarine down far enough to where you can't see anymore without your lights on, because light, I mean... And there is a day-night cycle as well, so even at night when there's no sun, all water is dark as shit.
Night ocean is terrifying.
Yeah. Day ocean was terrifying.
Night ocean, well, when you were swimming back from the big ship, man, those little hoppy fish?
Yeah.
What were they called?
I don't remember. Some alien fish name?
Yeah. Scares you. It just comes shooting out of the water by you and, like, flies over the top of you and goes back in, and then it's like, catch this thing? And you're like... get it, Adam.
Yeah, so then, like, I end up catching a fish with my bare hand, and then since it's in your hand, if you want to eat it, you have to take it back to a crafting table to cook it.
Yeah.
Or you can just throw it. You can just throw this fish.
Can you hold it out of the water till it dies?
No, because I had, before I quit playing, I had a couple of fish that, like, I have no storage for this, and I can't cook it yet. But I want to hold on to it so I don't have to catch this fish. So, like, I just left him in my little escape pod, which is your starting
base. You just threw him on the floor.
Yeah, so, like, and then I came back in and I just had fish flopping on the floor. Oh. So, I don't know if they die or not. Or
yeah, maybe they're air breathers and that's why they hop across
cruel the surface. Cruel and unusual punishment?
Could be. Or maybe I just hope they die.
They're evolving for when land comes. So,
cruel and unusual punishment, I suppose.
No, it's really, it's fairly pretty. The underwater is really pretty.
And then that's what it's, I mean, most the of this game obviously takes place underwater.
The surface is... Minimally interesting because it's just oceanscape, but underneath, it's the use of colors is really good.
Yeah, and like you have to scavenge like metal scrap from your downed ship and things like that. I was reading somewhere that they have other crashes on the planet that you can explore. I don't know if that's something that they haven't implemented yet, or if it's if they just have. But it'd be like in Minecraft where you come across like old ruins,
right? So you can find a bunch of stuff.
You can find some stuff or things like that. Yeah, and I mean it was. For being an early access, its crafting system was actually pretty expansive already. So
that's what I was going to ask. How complete does it seem for being early access?
So, really complete, surprisingly. I mean, I could easily see somebody releasing this as of right now for $20 as a complete game. And the fact that this is still in early access and they're going to be adding more to it was pretty impressive.
Like a lava lizard.
Like a lava lizard?
I was just looking at it.
That is a lava lizard.
It's also a dude in a suit.
Oh, that I haven't seen yet, so that'll be something interesting to...
Yeah, I think this is concept art for the stuff they're adding.
That's awesome.
Nice. Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff they're adding. And, like, the first vehicle you can build is one of those little motorized things that will just pull you underwater. So, like, you're faster underwater, but you still have to worry about... I don't know.
You can you make underwater bases? Like, yes.
You can. You have to get, obviously craft all your materials and everything, and then you're... But as you're building, you have to hold your breath, so you have to, like, place a couple walls, go back to the surface, come back down, and
can
then,
you make, like, a... Because... in just like pirates, for example, would use large bells and they would
like diving bells.
Yeah, diving bells, and then they would. I mean, couldn't you make something similar to that? But you said that the pipes was one way of doing
The pipes was one way to pump air somewhere, but as far as like trapping air, like a diving bell, nothing that I saw so far. But there are ways to get oxygen around, and there are some fish that you can grab and use them as airbags, so you can just breathe the air out of these fishes.
Kind of fish
that's exactly what it is. And then there are also these like natural air vents where you just go stand over them and it will release an air bubble and that will refill your air so you can continue to swim. So, I mean, there are multiple ways to be able to stay down longer, but you still have to, I mean, it's still something you have to keep track of.
Nice.
And, like, if you get a hull breach in your ship, water will start pumping in, so slowly your submarine will flood, and then you have to repair the hull breach and then pump all the water back out of your ship. So,
nice.
There's a lot you can do with it. It seems really fun. And for 20 bucks,
a lot of thought into
that. Yeah, and for 20 bucks, it's not that bad. You probably get more than 20 hours out of it, of entertainment out of it.
Anytime you can explore the entire ocean,
yeah,
you can put some time into it. An ocean planet, mind you. Not even just our oceans.
Yeah, a whole planet.
A water world, you might say. Ooh. Hmm?
Yeah. Maybe there'll be one place of land.
With horses on it.
With horses and trees.
All right.
But that is all I've got for that.
So my game is called Reign of Kings. It's another Minecraft-like game in the sense that it's a sandbox. It's not procedurally generated, but you can craft things. You start out with nothing. And then you work your way up to having a castle and owning land.
Yeah, you start off like a naked caveman.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a thong,
it reminded
actually.
Me a lot of Rust. So.
Yeah, it's so similar to Rust. It's just Rust except medieval.
Nice.
And so, really, I mean, the similarities to Rust are, one of them being that if you log out, you're laying down somewhere, and you're laying down and you can be killed.
Yeah.
So,
oh, really?
Yes. So, and that's exactly how Rust is. Rust is, they want you to make a building that you can sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what's really interesting is once you start out, you can go to any player's home, setting, and break through walls or doors and take all of their stuff. And one of the really interesting things that you can do once that you're inside is put down a crest. The crest will allow you to take control of their land, thereby becoming the lord of your own castle. No one can build there, and all of your doors can be have security settings where you can set the door to be a part of your family, which is your guild, essentially. Mm-hmm. So anybody in your guild can open it up. And you have a crest, like a banner, that you can also build. And really interesting interplay with just having these buildings that people can break into and kill you while you sleep and take your stuff. makes PvP really interesting. And combat is actually quite interesting because it's a lot like Chivalry. So if anybody's played Chivalry before, and like the dynamic swinging of the sword, I mean, they have like what? I think it's like 6 attacks in Chivalry, and all of those are mimicked in this game. And another interesting thing is that there's people can be stronger than you in the sense that different armor and different weapons that you use will change gameplay, just like Chivalry. I mean, when you're in an archer in Chivalry, for example, you're going to be faster and hardly no armor. You do the same thing here. I mean, you can have leather armor and do bows and like fast daggers, or you can get iron armor and run really slow. And you kind of build up to those things over time. But it's always better to just steal someone's base, and then you already have accessibility to all the things. And it's like Minecraft in the sense that you have to, or even Starbound, where you have to craft new crafting tables that have more advanced recipes. So you have to start out with just a workbench, and then you work to a tinker table, and the tinker table will have like up to tier 5. So you kind of build up, and if you steal someone's base, then you just get to skip this entire starting step. Because it takes a while to make any... Well, I think the first tier block doesn't take that much. It's either wood or clay, which are easily... You can easily access those.
Once you get up to, like, cobblestone or things
like cobblestone that. Yeah, cobblestone is
insane. Take more manufacturing.
Mm-hmm, a lot more manufacturing. One of the really cool parts about the game that I think sets it apart uniquely is that there's a large castle that's actually in the shape of a knight, and the head of it is actually a tower, and that's the tower where the throne is. If you get to the edge of the island that you're on, then you can cross this bridge and get on the throne, and once you're the throne, you're the king. And you can set taxes, and then anything that's mined or gathered in the game, you get a percentage of that.
That's really nice.
Families will fight over, like, you know, control of this throne. And so while you're playing, just on any server, probably 2 or 3 times a day, the king will change. And there's a lot of really interesting team-based combat based off that with the archers and everything. And holding when you're taking over someone's base, you actually have to put down a crest just like you do in the tower and take ownership of that area. And that takes, I think, 10 minutes.
You have
to hold this area. And so friends and I were playing a game, and we just logged in. We found this guy's base with no door, so we walk in there, I start stealing his stuff. I'm about to leave, but then my two friends show up, and this guy logs in his iron armor, and we're all naked. You know, some people have wood armor, and we have clubs, and we're just beating the crap out of him with these clubs, and then, you know, we kill him, put down the crest. We didn't realize that he could keep spawning at his bed, so eventually we destroyed his beds, and he didn't have a crest down, which prevents other players from building in your land. But so we were able to put down doors to prevent other people from getting in. So if he called for help, they would have to bash through a door, which has a lot of damage. Nice. You can do structural damage with your weapon to anything in the game. They actually have ballistas and stuff that do high structural damage. So
one thing that was you bringing up ballistas. I thought it was really cool when I was watching the video on this. That if you build a ballista and you have to fire it, you have to get like, depending on how far you want to fire it, you have to get the counterweight right and everything
like that.
Physics to it seemed really, really cool.
No, it's really interesting. The physics system is pretty interesting. I think that they're going to allow you to make trebuchets and other types of siege weapons. I haven't seen a battering ram yet, but I'm sure it exists.
Nice.
You can make. I'm hoping that they allow you to make moats. At the moment, you can dig in the sand and you can dig up stuff, but you can't affect the ground environment or the terrain. Mm. And the spawning of resources isn't programmatic, so they're always in the same spots, even stone. And then after server restart, they come back kind of like DayZ.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same with the plot pole.
Pretty much crest the plot pole, you know. It's very similar, minus the stealing someone else's area, which I think is the best part about this. It's just breaking into someone's thing, because we had a lot of fun, and it was like in the first 30 minutes, we're like stealing this person's house, and then we have a family, like a clan already that owns this huge tower. I mean, it was kind of his fault. His tower was made out of wood. Someone already broke into it and stole a whole bunch of his crap, and then he was complaining, you know, on side chat, essentially, that, you know, some cowards took my tower, and this and that and the other thing. And then other people are kind of consoling him, and then other players are saying, I mean, what was it made out of? I mean, what did you make your tower out of? He's like, oh, it was wood. And it's like, oh, I mean, you can just chop right through wood, man.
So you made a completely destructible tower that's easily defeated. Okay.
I'm sure he took it back. You're mad
at someone that did that.
I haven't been really playing it. Yeah. We got dragged into the disease, so I'm sure the guy came back and took it. I mean, several hours later while we're still playing, I come back from mining, and then I see him there naked with a club beating on the wall trying to get back into his base, and he's come up behind him with this huge axe.
Now, one thing I liked about Chivalry is how in-depth the combat was with feinting and parrying and all of those
feinting,
things.
Feinting, I'm not aware of that being a thing yet. Okay. That was a really cool thing about Chivalry, is being able to fake people out so that your next actual swing came in just a hair late after their block. But in this one, they do have blocking. Your scroll wheel does have a stab attack and an over-the-head attack.
Okay, same as Chivalry.
Yeah, they and you have a left click, but in Chivalry, you're able to affect your body's movement to change when a strike will hit, mm-hmm. and you can affect like how you're swinging,
like swinging the mouse and stuff like mm-hmm, that.
Exactly, yeah. But in this, I haven't noticed that nuance. Not to say that it doesn't exist, but it's not as apparent.
So it's almost a toned-down version of Chivalry's combat, even if it's ever so slightly.
Yeah,
well, in Chivalry, people would swing their mouse so crazy that they'd be doing like 360 swings and shit, like. Mm-hmm.
And so you don't know when to block because you don't know when the actual contact of the swing is going to be coming.
But that was one thing. You could make it swing faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you could start a swing and then swipe your mouse and you'd come through quicker and they wouldn't block quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually not heartbroken that you can't do that because they would tone it down. Now, can you hold block? Or is it like Chivalry where it blocks for a second and
goes down? You cannot hold block. Okay. I mean, not like you could in real life.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but no, they want to make it more strategic.
No, and that's what I was hoping for.
I mean, John saw me fight someone. It works a lot the same way. He blocked a lot, but whenever his attack came late, so I was able to back up, and he would never hit me. He didn't even hit me once. No. I mean, granted, he was at a huge disadvantage because he wasn't wearing any armor, and I was in iron armor with huge axe. Yeah. But
he did block an impressive amount.
He blocked a lot. You could tell that he was at least somewhat experienced with that system. Because he blocked pretty much every strike. I had to do different strikes and vary my timings in order to break through his defense.
Got him with the stab one, then you finally got him in the leg with like a sweeping one.
Oh, that's another interesting thing, is that you can actually break people's legs just by swinging at their legs. So when Lenny, a friend, and I started playing the first day, we were just kind of exploring. We didn't really know what we were doing. There's not a wiki, like a very good wiki anyway, online for this game yet. So trying to figure out what you need to do is a little hard. So we end up coming to this castle, and this guy logs in right next to us, and he's in iron armor, and we're like, hey, what's up, dude? And he puts away his axe, and then he started getting really close to me, and he took out this rope, and I was like, no, man, no. And so I started running away, and Lenny runs away, but then he chases Lenny down with his axe and just chops his legs up so he can't run, and then gets him in, like with this lasso, essentially, and drags him back to be hanged. Just hangs him. Like, then I was like, I better go help Lenny. I'm like, long gone. The guy's not gonna catch me because he's in iron armor. I come back and he's like, you're gonna hang with your friend. You're gonna hang with your friend. And then I was just beating them with the club. There's two of them all of a sudden. I got took down, suffice to say, and we're both, you know, sitting there incapacitated. We're still alive and we're talking to him. And then while they're about to hang us, he's like, okay, I'm gonna give you a rundown on this game. And so he told us pretty much everything that you need to know about playing the game from the beginner, which was really nice. And then right afterwards, his friends lynched us. Yeah, right there. And then
that's a cool way to welcome somebody to a game. So you're about to die, but let me break it down for you, son. This is what you need to be doing.
Well, that's a really cool thing that you can add to, especially because it's going to be like clan versus clan or family versus family, that you'd be like, okay, well, we got this big fight and we captured a couple of them. So now we're going to take them back and
so we have
hang
more bros.
Them.
We need bros.
So you could just hang somebody up and leave them there?
Yeah, there's even dungeons, too.
Really?
Yeah, you could lasso someone, throw them in a dungeon. I mean, they'll be there until they die, I think.
Or until you kill them.
So what happens if you're that player? Is there a way to suicide?
I think there's a way to restart.
Okay.
But you can just starve to death. You actually starve to death quite quickly. Food is an ever-present thing in this game, and it's not like Minecraft. Hunger happens a lot faster.
Okay.
And it weakens you quite a bit. if you don't have a full hunger meter. And berries, like small things like berries and things that you'll find at the beginning actually only give you like a hundredth of your bar, maybe.
Wow. Yeah.
So
you gotta kill animals.
Yeah.
Feast upon them. I'm alright with that.
No, it sounds like a lot of fun. I'm going to have to check it out. And you said it's only $20?
$20 right now. They have a 4-pack as well, so which is, you get a little discount on it. Mm-hmm. So if you guys want to play with your friends...
Pick that or up. Us.
Or us, so that we have a large family and we can just become the king of everything, then, yeah. I'm not saying that I want to be king.
No, I wouldn't allow that. I want to be king.
We'll be just, like, internal battles.
Yeah.
Get challenged from the inside. Lock eyes. No, that's all I have for the game. So
no, it sounds really fun. I watched a few videos on it. I didn't get any chance to watch any of you guys play, but it seemed like a shitload of fun.
Oh yeah,
I watched Peter play. It was.
I mean, there's some things that are lacking, just like with any of those games. I mean, this game is still in early access, so it's something to keep in mind. The graphics aren't all there, the animations aren't perfect. There's a bit of latency right now, in the latency issues in the newest patch, the newest alpha patch. But there's a lot. The game has a lot to offer already, and it's offering more later. So
nice. Cool. Yeah, I thought it looked really cool too. Especially if you're into Minecraft or Rust or anything.
Any of
like
the sandboxy kind of games.
Yeah, definitely. Well, if that's all you guys have for video games, we'll move on to tech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am talking, excuse me, I'm talking this week about USB Type-C.
Sounds like an STD.
It does a little bit.
I know everyone in this room has tried to plug in a USB cord or device or something and gotten it in the wrong way the first time, had to flip it around, try again.
Got it perfect.
No, every single time,
even in the dark.
Yeah, that's a lie. Yes, that's not even physically possible.
I was going to say, let me see the bottom of your phone and see your little scratch marks.
All the scratch marks? Surprisingly, none. Not to say it hasn't happened, but there are no scratch marks.
Let me check it out here.
I'm just gentle.
I think I'm good. I mean, there's a little, it's a little rough around the edges, but I'm not. I don't have like shaky trunk hands.
I don't try and jam that shit in there. Wait till it fits.
It's like Sherlock Holmes stuff going on right now.
I think so.
Like in the first episode, he's like, "Oh, he must be a drunk or something."
Yeah,
like,
that's exactly what it is. I'm not original.
So, what is this USB Type-C?
This is a new connector. It's a reversible connector, so you can plug it in upside down, either way,
left way,
a lot like the iPhone connector.
Yeah. The type that everybody's used to is the USB Type A. That's the big, just standard USB.
Rectangular.
And that hasn't changed since USB 1, 2, and 3 have all used that. This is a connector, so it's not tied to any one of those. Mm-hmm. It could still be a USB 2 port. I think there's a phone out right now actually that uses
USB
this
kit.
Type of connector, but it's actually the underlying hardware is only USB 2. Mm-hmm. You know, the beauty of this connector is the reversibility and that it's smaller. It's like it's more along the size of a micro USB.
Oh wow!
Cord.
Okay,
yeah.
So much smaller.
Yeah, so you could have, instead of having different kinds, you know, standard, mini, micro, all that, you could just have this one type on your cell phone, on your laptop.
Make it even more universal than USBs are already trying to
be. Right, exactly. This also goes hand in hand with USB 3.1.
Nice.
Which is coming out as a new standard. Basically, it's twice as fast as USB 3, or has the potential bandwidth.
To be that fast.
Yeah, 10 gigabits per second.
Wow.
It also adds it updates the USB power delivery specification to 100 watts.
That's incredible.
From 2.5.
Oh, wow. Holy
That's
shit.
That's incredible.
That is super
so
fast.
So you could charge potentially a full-size laptop with this, you know.
Okay.
There's also, it also supports different modes, different protocols. So, like, you could put an adapter for HDMI or VGA or DisplayPort, you know.
Interesting.
And run it all through this one connector.
Ooh, wow. So, okay.
That's impressive.
I don't know if you guys heard of the new Apple MacBook that's coming out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it. I'm not a big Apple fan, so I haven't looked into it at all.
I'm not personally a big Apple fan either, but...
Put a lot of engineering into it, though.
They're using... That's kind of their big thing is this. This isn't Apple. This is, a normal standard, USB standard. Mm-hmm. But their new MacBook has just one port. That's all it has.
Is this
Type-C port. So you use that for charging...
So it doesn't have a power port or anything like that.
How many of these ports? It just has the one type?
It just has the one.
Oh, my God. Which is kinda, so annoying.
No, that's bullshit on Apple's
part. I feel like they're doing that so that they can slap you with proprietary connectors.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
Well, or splitters or something like that.
Well, there's an adapter right now that I think does, like, HDMI, USB 3.
It's thin, though, right? If I remember correctly, the new model that we're referring to.
The new adapter?
No, the laptop that you're referring to. Yeah, it's really very thin. Very minified. Yeah. I was reading that they had new battery technology, like terraced batteries, so that they can make batteries thinner but get the same amount of output.
Like, if you look at the laptop, it gets thicker at the point
where
the
battery
is.
Yeah, the battery. Really? Yeah. Where all the important stuff is.
But it's kind of cool. I think there's a new Chromebook also.
Oh, cool.
It has two ports and two regular USB ports. So they did it the
Google.
Right way.
Yeah.
But it's just cool to be able. You don't have to carry around a power brick or special power adapters.
It'll be like
anymore.
Carrying around just your phone charger,
exactly.
Like a cable with a little plug that plugs into the wall, and that's all you'll need. As opposed to this big, huge honking thing that's got a surge protector in the middle of it, and
yeah. What? And at some point,
version.
Like at some point, if this connector takes over, like this would be the only connector you would need.
Right.
So you would run your video through this, you would run, you know, just like an HDMI cable. It would replace all those different ports with just one port.
That would be really nice.
Especially really nice. For this company, because now they can have all of the accessory, you know, like Frapple, basically monopolize the connector industry.
Right.
You wouldn't need
it. Well, but this isn't Apple. Yeah, this isn't proprietary. This is a standard, so.
But you could make a specific connector and
right. Well,
area.
Like we were talking about Apple, like their MacBook only has one port, so they offer an adapter that's got like multiple other ports, but it's $80.
But it allows you to make your own connector. Like if you could have proprietary connectors if you're just a third party that's going to incorporate USB-C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it would just make everything a lot easier.
Oh yeah.
Like, this is definitely a standard we should have gone with.
Oh, yeah, a long time
15
ago.
15 years ago. Yeah. Like, why are we still... Why isn't the plug reversible?
Yeah. Or, I mean, if you're using this for, like, you saying charging cell phones, how many times have you asked to borrow someone's cell phone charger and it doesn't fit in your phone at all?
Right.
Like, if you had this, not an issue anymore. Any of your devices can be charged anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not anywhere, but...
And hopefully, there's some hope that this will also make some companies start moving away from the proprietary idea. If you can just, you know, bundle it all in a way. Everybody's trying to make everything smaller right now.
Good luck.
I say that hesitantly, because Apple's never going to let go of what
always
they have.
Always things done with good intentions, but never.
Well, but like on this Apple MacBook, like, that's the only port, so it will kind of help that port, you know, the standard, like, move forward, but on the other hand, it helps them sell $80 adapters. And
yeah, I guess it just depends on the specific implementation, right? Like, the technology's there. I'm like, oh, we're going to use this, but it could be used for evil, I could see.
Yeah,
anything could be used for evil.
That's pretty much it. One of the things that I think I said a little bit about it earlier was it not being hooked to 3.1. The good thing about that is that people can start putting this Type-C connector on things now, even if they don't want to invest in the 3.1 hardware.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So they just want to still be a USB 3 device, but they can move forward with this connector.
It's that's somewhat awesome. Backwards compatible, really. So you can go to a USB 2 or whatever and
right.
use it.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. It's actually, because it's not backwards compatible, like physically, because it's smaller. You know?
Right, yeah.
So you can't actually plug it in, but the underlying technology is backwards compatible
USB
3.1
is.
So. Yeah. But that's pretty much all I got. This is the wave of the future.
Ooh. And you're hearing it here first, people.
I just keep seeing that little cartoon strip Peter showed us.
Yeah, it was a little cartoon strip where it was just like, now with this new USB-C, you can't plug it in the wrong way. And it's like a guy, and he's like trying to plug it in. His hand starts shaking, and he goes to plug it in, and it just turns 90
degrees. Boom,
yeah.
Boom.
If there's a way to screw it up, people
will
find a way.
Yeah.
Every time.
Warnings exist for a reason.
Warnings exist for the stupid.
Because it's happened before.
Yeah. Although me, who didn't read the warnings on my vape.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the spring had slid up inside, and I didn't even realize that was a problem, because I just got it, and I put the battery in, and it shorted the connection, and then melted the spring up into the top piece, and I had to get a pair of pliers and rip it back out.
Your shit's all janky right now.
No, it works perfect, but I had to recoil the spring by hand, so every time I open it up and you look at the thing, the spring's coiled, like, looks like a special person did it. And I was like, what happened to your spring? And I'm just like, that's me hand-twisting a spring into a spring again.
You called yourself a special person, John.
I am special.
We know.
Unique.
Yeah, so what I'm bringing this week for my gadget is the monolith. Oh. So there's
some
been
sort
electric
of lifting device.
No, it's an electronic skateboard.
Oh,
and it's the first one that has motors inside of the wheels, which hands down is probably the coolest thing right off the bat.
Well, I don't know if you've ever ridden a skateboard before, but those things take kind of a beating. So having the motor on the outside is a huge disadvantage.
Well, and the other thing is the old ones were belt driven, and so they said the belts were breaking down, and then you have the big motor on the outside. You know, so they're just not sleek looking. Like, they don't look super cool. They don't look streamlined like a standard skateboard. You got these big motors with a gear and pulley and a belt.
It looks like you built it in your garage with like,
yeah, it looks
old
like
RC car parts and stuff.
Or like modified your lawnmower.
Or something. That's what it looks like, yeah.
And strapped it to your feet. Yeah, it's on Kickstarter right now. They've got 356 backers for $273,000.
Nice. Did they meet their goal?
Oh, yeah. Their goal was... the pledged of goal was 100,000.
How many backers?
356.
That's not that many, dude.
No,
for
that's
how
a
much
lot of
money.
Yeah. Well, it's because they have the backer options, you know? So, like, they have a decent amount of low-dollar backers, but...
Yeah, the first few tiers are sold out, so...
Yeah, but once you get up into the 1,099 or more, you start getting the...
it's about $1,000 a person, practically.
Yeah. Yeah, and so you can, like, once you get to, like, $1,099, you start getting the whole skateboard, which is a $1,399, is what they're going to sell it for.
Which is not a cheap device.
No. No. That's probably the biggest downfall. It's super fast, though. Up to 24 miles an hour is its top speed.
And you're saying it does, what, something like 20 uphill?
Uphill,
that's
yeah.
pretty impressive. I mean, I'm sure that varies depending on how steep the hill is. Like, some of the hills in Seattle, you're probably not doing 20 up on a skateboard.
And how much you weigh.
Yeah.
So. Well, it's been tested up to 250 pounds.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So they didn't go any higher than that, or they did and it broke, and they just don't want to talk about it. It's a possibility.
People can use a real skateboard and lose some weight before you can use this one.
Yeah, and so this has a unibody deck. The deck is where your feet go, people, just in case you're wondering.
Thank you, John.
It's one solid piece, so just they wanted a really smooth, sleek-looking thing, so that's what they did. They went with a single piece. The battery goes inside the deck underneath your feet, and it's like a battery sheet, which is kind of cool. And you can get different batteries depending on your needs. So if you don't need their biggest battery, which will take you 10 miles...
Like, maybe you want a lighter battery.
Because the weight of this thing without the battery is 12 pounds. 15 with the battery, so not...
Guys, it's up weight. It's not light by any means.
No, and it's in a longboard design, not like your standard skateboard, which is a smart decision on their part. They're easier to ride. They'll get way more people involved if it's simple or something like that, and something as big and stable as a longboard feels compared to, like, a standard skateboard.
Well, and longboards aren't meant to, you know, jump down stairs with or carve bowls with and stuff like that. Like, it's meant to just kind of cruise and surf the streets and the sidewalks.
Yeah.
A lot more casual.
They call them Manta motors, and they go inside of the wheel, and it's super cool because the wheels still use standard skateboard bearings, and you can just slide the whole wheel off of the motor assembly and clean it. And just like,
oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, super simple to clean, take apart.
And replace because the same bearings. So.
Yeah. Yep.
It seems very consumer-friendly. Yeah, like once the parts actually start getting manufactured.
Yeah, and it's got dual rear wheel drive.
Okay.
Dude, saying that. Say rear wheel
drive. Rear wheel drive.
Rear wheel drive.
It's
rear
hard for me. My brain doesn't
rear
work.
Rear wheel drive.
Rear wheel drive.
Rear wheel drive.
Oh, man.
It's real drive.
It's rear wheel.
Yes. It said the battery cycle life said about 1,000 cycles for full, like perfect full charge before you'll start getting some form of
diminished
degradation.
Returns.
Yeah. The throttle control is on a little remote that lips around your hand, and so they're showing you can have your hand open.
It's like putting it in neutral.
No, you can just, like, it'll hang off your hand. So the way it has, like, a little curl back, like, flexible lip.
Inputs buttons and stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
It looks almost like a Wii nunchuck.
Yeah. It basically is a Wii nunchuck that's wireless that you hold in your hand. It has a USB port built into it for either charging, or you can charge your phone from it. You can also charge your wireless remote that you use to throttle it with.
And that USB port is in the deck, right?
Yeah, okay. It's right in the very tip of the nose.
Okay. So when you smash it into a bunch of stuff. That's what I just
thought, yeah.
At least it looked like the tip. For all I know, is the tail end.
Could
of
have
it.
Some kind of cover over it, though.
Yeah,
too.
Or I would just a hope, little, probably a plastic cap so you don't get dust and debris in there. The Manta motors are 100% weatherproof, which is nice. So
I mean,
because that was like Peter's first question was like,
"What if you go through a puddle?"
Yeah. I mean, you never really want to ride a skateboard in the rain, anyways. Mm-hmm. So definitely not something like this. But puddles and wet spots on the ground definitely happen. So they need to have some sort of protection.
Yeah.
So. Can you use different wheels on the front?
Yeah, there's going to be interswappable wheels and different colors and stuff like that, you know, because everybody's going to want to...
The front wheels are standard skateboard wheels, right?
So and the rear ones...
Any longboard wheels would work on that.
And then the rear ones, though, are the ones that have the motors housed inside of them, which are special ones that
motorized
wrap around.
Ones and everything.
But it does look super sleek. As soon as you see a picture of it, and it just looks really cool. Like, the whole design looks really, really clean.
Yeah,
there was an insane amount of planning into that design.
Yeah,
so.
The developers were saying everything they made is completely custom to do exactly what they wanted it to do. They were able to make the body light enough so that they didn't. While it's still 15 pounds for a motorized skateboard with a battery built inside of it and everything, like that's a really reasonable weight. Everybody I know could carry it without.
No problem. Most people, I think, could carry it with no problem unless you're an old lady or a baby.
Yeah.
Some sort of wussy.
Which and probably shouldn't be on the longboard anyway.
Probably not.
Old ladies and babies.
No. Yeah. Not a motorized one that can go up to 20 miles an hour. Really cool thing about it is there's an app on your phone that you can get that's directly linked with this, and you can check out your sessions. You can set your maximum speeds. So if you don't want to go 24 miles an hour because you're not that good on a skateboard yet and that shit scares the shit out of you.
Put a governor at 10 and it won't go any faster.
Exactly. 10 will max you out so when you're holding forward, you're not going to just keep gaining speed. And
what about acceleration?
It didn't really show the acceleration. Like, it doesn't say anything like 0 to 20 in, you know, 2.5 minutes.
I mean, could you control your acceleration?
Oh, yeah. Throttling it up and down? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so it's and then pressure sensitive is, like, depending on how far you move it up?
Yes.
Okay.
It's basically a nunchuck controller.
Well, with just a joystick and a few buttons.
It's got a little thumb throttle on the very tip of it. That's really all it is. And then that little curling around, like, rubbery type piece, the flexible portion of the plastic, actually clips onto the tip of the skateboard. So when you're done, you can just slide it right onto the end of your skateboard.
And it's all human steering now, right?
Yeah, it's all human steering. It's all you. You're not driving yourself on it.
Although that would be kind of cool, too.
Gesture controls.
I said left, and your controller dies. And you're, no! Oh, God. It has a stiff deck. Design. Not flexible deck. And they said they wanted that for stability at speed and stuff like that. They don't want it to feel...
Well, it makes sense, but it is a little bit different than longboards. Most longboards have a decent amount of flex in them.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like people transitioning might be a little odd for them, but it's not anything you couldn't get over pretty quickly.
No,
I don't think it would stop you too much.
Are they going to give specs so people can make their own decks? But like the battery compartment and stuff, like how wide?
Oh, like and, custom length and stuff?
Exactly.
I haven't read anything about them.
That'd be really cool. Because, I mean, that's a huge part of skateboarding.
Especially in longboarding. Because, I mean, you'll see some longboards that are super long and then some that are more like little banana boards, but they're still doing roughly the same thing.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with the charge time. So, like, for instance, a remote-controlled helicopter, the little ones, usually fly for, it says 15, but it's usually about 10. If you're doing continuous flight, it takes about 90 minutes to charge.
Yeah.
This will take you 10 miles and takes 90 minutes to charge.
Wow. Nice. That's just as fast. That's
really
impressive.
What are the power requirements?
Doesn't say on here.
Okay.
Like, it doesn't give you, like, all of that information. Not yet, at least.
It'd just be cool if it was, like, cars, for example. Those refilling stations, like electric cars, they have different voltages that you can use so that you can charge your car faster. I'm like 220 and 440. Yes. So,
But didn't you say it kind of charges while you're going or something?
The braking.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And so while you're using the braking mechanism on, it's actually charging the battery back up. Thus, if you're in a really hilly area like San Francisco and you're going downhill the entire time, the whole time you could be charging your skateboard.
That's pretty cool. Using the friction to charge the battery, get a little extra life out of it.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice.
And just brakes in general.
Well, yeah, that's really cool, too.
I need brakes, I'm telling you right now.
But when I skateboarded all the time, I can't tell you how many pairs of shoes I wore through trying to stop myself bombing hills, and you just drag one foot behind, and it eats away at the bottom of your shoe.
Yeah, no, that... I need breaks. I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
Oh, right here, Adam. There you go. There's the remote.
Oh, it's like it literally looks like a nunchuck with a little wiener on the bottom that hooks around your hand.
With a little wiener. That's exactly, I think that's what they were going for.
They were being a little penis-y.
It looks a lot penis-y. I mean...
No, but it shows you from, like, in their video on Kickstarter, it shows you, like, beginners using it just kind of cruising around on the street, and then it shows you people that are actually obviously proficient longboarders, like hauling ass and sliding around corners,
doing
and
sweet
shit,
power slides and stuff,
weaving back and forth.
Well, I think even in one of the videos, it didn't show a guy carving a bowl with it, even? Or was that a mistake when we were watching the video? Oh, I could have sworn one of the parts was a dude carving a bowl with it. Just like. No? Oh, all right.
What's
never
carving
mind.
A bowl?
Riding
back and forth?
Back and forth and like riding along the walls and stuff. Like,
No.
Wow. Oh.
Well, you guys doing back and forth in the street. I don't know your skateboard lingo. You're throwing me off. you're saying carving a bowl, and I'm like, maybe?
Like literally carving a bowl out of wood or what?
While
like
skateboarding.
Stone.
No, you know how like you would carve back and forth on skis? Imagine the same thing, but in a skate park on all of the ramps and stuff.
Yeah, I don't think they showed him in a skate park. Just mostly street riding. Oh, cool. But I did like the one scene. He goes through the bicycle lane, and he's passing the cyclist on his skateboard, and he's not even pushing. He's just like, So, I mean, I'm a lazy skateboarder, okay?
We can see that.
I've tried pushing myself around, but I weigh a lot, man. It's a lot of heft.
Got to build them leg muscles, John.
I know, you got to stand on one leg while you're kicking with the other leg, and then you got to get proficient at switching, because nobody can do that forever.
Yeah. Or just build a bunch of stamina, and then you're good.
Stamina, I don't know what you're talking about.
What does that word mean?
Yeah.
What?
What is this thing I don't have? Yeah, no, that's pretty much it, though. It's the monolith. You should check it out. If you got a lot of money, maybe a tax return.
It's really awesome.
Or you're just super into skateboarding.
I watched the video, and I was like, damn, I want one of these. And then I saw the price. And
well, not only the price, but in the area we live in, I would only get to ride it a couple months a year. Like, maybe if I lived in Southern California or something, I could ride it all the time.
It's waterproof. You can ride it.
I'm not going to.
No, I done goofed. It wasn't $1,099. $899 was the original
tier.
That
was the, yeah.
That you could get
it
at.
One.
So you could have saved a couple $100 if you jumped on the bandwagon.
Yeah, and you still can, actually.
Now it's what, it like $10.99? Yeah,
absolutely.
$11.99 is where you're at. And they're at 65 out of 100. And once they hit 100, it's going to go to the, it jumps a lot. It goes to the 5,000 or more.
That's for two, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, that's insane.
That is insane.
I can see a lot of, like, I mean, you go to a beach town and you've got places that rent, like, bicycles and stuff like that. So I could see this being implemented there, a company buying four or five of them. You know, like, you can either rent this bicycle to go around town with or a remote control skateboard.
Yeah, where I just was in California, it's would be a super acceptable area. College town.
Absolutely. Yeah, Sam Louis. Nice. Yeah. Oh, perfect place for
them. I don't live there anymore. Now I'd die.
All those rich college kids.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. Super sweet. You should check it out. If you got a lot of money, buy one, and then let me use it.
Buy us
Just give it. Yeah. So yeah, say, buy us one. Yeah, just send it.
Just donate it to the shop. Or to the show.
Buy one for Waiting for Players, you rich listeners, you.
Or send us the money.
And we'll buy ourselves one. Either or.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's about it. Monolith Skateboard, check it out.
I just might do that once I have a bunch of money. What I'm talking
so about, never.
Yeah, so pretty much never. What I'm talking about this week, it's called the Finger Reader. It's still very much in development. There's no price tag. You can't get one for yourself. But I thought it was really cool, so I wanted to bring it up. It's being developed by researchers at the MIT Media Lab. And what it is it's a ring with a camera on it that you wear... it's developed for the blind or the people of hard of sight, so you can open up a book, wear this ring, put your finger on the pages, and just start sliding your finger across, and it will read the text out loud to you. So it's right now is it's got to be tethered to a laptop, unfortunately, so your ring has this big cable coming off of it, and the voice that it reads to you is worse than Stephen Hawking. It's it's pretty hard to listen to, but like I said, it's in really early development. They hope to eventually have it to where just an Android device will be able to do all the computing for it.
Nice.
And it'll read out loud from your phone. I'm sure they're going to implement other voices into it. I hope so.
That thing was painful, man. I listened to it. I was watching the video on it, and I'm like, that's kind of cool. And then it started docking, and I was like,
yeah. Yeah, it's really, really bad. But early development, one can hope it's going to get better. In the camera, though, so since you have to drag your finger across the line, it's made for the blind. They can't exactly see the lines on the page. So the camera is set up to, right now, the only way it has to be able to kind of tell to make sure you're online is It looks forward to make sure that, A, it checks the spacing between lines, so it knows to only pick up in that amount of space, and it looks forward, so it's kind of thinking about where it's coming next from.
Right.
So it will keep you somewhat in just by that, and then if you go off by too much, it will beep at you, because it's like, hey, these aren't what's supposed to be coming next. They do want to implement a little motor on the top and the bottom, so it can vibrate on the bottom or the top of your finger to be like, just basically kind of nudge your finger back to where it's supposed to go. Which is great, because again, this is made for people that can't see the book. So I thought that it was just a really cool device for people that, you know, especially the blind, that they're not going to have to rely on Braille books anymore. They can just be like, oh, let me borrow a book that you really like and use this for that.
Or publishing companies making an audio version.
That's true.
Because I nothing beats a good narrator, you know? Mm-hmm. So if they could get Morgan Freeman's voice on that. You know,
you would just need him to say every word ever.
Yeah.
But not only every word, but inflections as well.
That is one thing that will be really hard to do is inflections.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you can on something like that.
No.
Because it would have to read and understand. And that would be a super impressive
Be able to look at the end of the word or the end of the sentence, realize it's a question, and then read it properly as a question.
Some upward inflection.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's still... I mean, it's leaps and bounds from where we were at when you just had to read a bumpy book as a, you know, for the blind, or you had to get huge glasses for it. Like I said, no price whatsoever, still in extremely early development. That was pretty much it. That's all the information that's out on it right now. Very, very short section.
I watched.
It seems pretty cool. It still has a long ways to go.
Oh, absolutely.
A very, very long way to go. Because right now, like, I read it and I think about, like, you just use an audiobook would be easier.
Yeah.
But a lot of books aren't on audiobook.
No, but most of them.
A lot of them are.
A lot of them are. I wouldn't say most, but...
I think it would be good for, like, textbooks, because there's not really... Or informational books, because those don't always translate well in the audiobook scene, so...
Well, that's a good point, too. And with this, you can also... It's not just a physical book. You can use it on, like, a Kindle or a tablet or things like that, so it would make web browsing a lot easier, too. If you were, like, say, going to Wikipedia and wanted to be able to read that, you could just put your finger to the screen and follow that along.
They already have a narrator for that, but yeah.
Whatever, Peter, you know what I'm saying.
Windows has Windows narrator, is all I'm saying.
It's probably with a better voice, too.
I'm sure it is, Cortana. Absolutely.
Cortana, read this.
I don't think she's that cool. No, it does look really neat. It's got a lot of good implications for the blind. Mm-hmm. Like, it can do some really cool things. It's definitely got some work to do.
Oh, no, absolutely. I was just really interested in
one, just make it prettier. It looks kind of wonky right now.
It looks
How
like
does
a very
work
big
with fonts, though. I'm curious, like, different.
It didn't get into that at all. Like, the information that was released on it was pretty limited. I don't know any of the hardware that they're using on the inside of it. They didn't even give you what kind of camera that they were using for it. So unfortunately, it is really limited. I just really, really like the idea and the technology.
Yeah, making things accessible to everybody. Yeah absolutely. Definitely.
I'm against it.
Where are you now?
And they are trying to develop it open source, so people will be able to tinker with it, and after it comes out, they'll be able to do other things to it. So,
absolutely.
There you go.
That's awesome.
So yeah, just a very quick, short tech segment for me this week.
One thing I was going to say is it showed the video of the way the camera is, like, working it, and it's got a line, and, like, once it's figured out the line, like you were saying, the distance is showing, like, two red lines, and it's, like, even with the finger moving a little bit back and forth, it was still able to stay on the line it was on.
Right.
And you can see the little red lines, like, recalculating all the time, but it stays right on there.
Yeah, it definitely tries to make sure that it's not going to be like, and then he so said Bob, because you skipped lines, you know? Like, it definitely tries to fight and keep you know,
it even
on the
said
line.
The word synthesize correctly.
It did. Although it had a problem with the word 10. Like, it was just like, it didn't pronounce the N at the end. It was just like, teh, and then it kept talking, and you're like,
Well...
Yeah.
Pattern recognition, not exactly there yet.
No, not yet. Like I said, very early development, but I thought it was really cool. It's something I'm going to keep my eyes on and kind of follow as this progresses.
Nice. Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. So, Peter, what do you have for us?
I have an awesome 3D printer.
Much cooler than my finger reader.
Oh, no, I think the finger reader is definitely cooler than 3D printing.
But you can 3D print a finger reader.
Oh, actually... a tangent before I actually get to my segment. They actually have a filament plastic, PLA plastic, that's actually conductive. So you can print like a circuit board.
Nice.
There's a
controller that they were using.
Yeah, there was another one. It's used as a conductive black ABS plastic, which boggled my mind because ABS is used for plumbing.
And electronics, John, didn't you know?
Apparently. I wasn't aware that it was a conductive material, but I'm going to, like...
The Home Depot turned on in you.
No, but I just saw it and I was like, really? ABS? What? We sell that shit for like nothing.
I was not aware of this property.
If anybody needs to do home electronic or home electrical fixes, just recommend plumbing tubing for them, John. Like, no, it's totally conductive. It'll work.
ABS I feel like they resin.
Have to, I feel like they have to do something to it to make it conductive.
I'm sure.
It's probably some sort of chemical thing happening.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a different kind of 3D printer. It's called Carbon 3D is the company that's making it, but they've actually been developing what they call CLIP, which is liquid interface, continuous liquid interface production. So you're essentially have a large build platform that's connected to a control arm, and then that gets put into a bath, essentially, of liquid plastic resin. And then from below, they're projecting UV light through essentially an oxygen membrane and activating this plastic and hardening it on the fly. And all the while, the control arm is pulling the platform up in different... And it goes in kind of a layer-by-layer basis, but it's still... continuous. Mm-hmm. There are other similar technologies that work this way. Like there's stereolithography, which is essentially the same thing, except you have to detach the plastic from the window from the window where the UV light is projecting through, mm-hmm. and then start that process over and over again. It's still kind of a layered process. Mm. Where traditional 3D printing is just 2D slices. Over and over and over and over again. Yeah, exactly. And the really interesting part about this is that you're capable of making things that even 3D printers aren't capable of making it like just like crazy geometric structures or things that machinists wouldn't be able to make because of the tools they have. Because tooling for certain things is impossible. You can't do it. And this opens the opportunity for us to make really interesting things that you can't make with traditional engineering. I find the technology fascinating, personally.
No, it's awesome.
Yeah.
It was really cool, especially with being able to use different materials that have different elasticity or different strengths to it. Mm-hmm. Like, you made two different balls. One, I mean, they were different colored just for ease of viewing, but one was damn near a bouncy ball, and the other one hit the ground like a brick.
Yeah.
And you can control those things with just the geometric structure you give it.
Right.
One of the things that I understand about it is that, I mean, from our manufacturing, we're able to do things on a nanoscale really well, but not on a micro scale very well. And now we're capable, with traditional 3D printing, like layered 3D printing, you are able to make things on the micro scale, but they really have hard edges and no smooth surfaces. Mm-hmm. With this technology, you're able to create just a homogeneous or like monolithic structure where there's no lines. And if you were to look at it under a telescope or a microscope, not a telescope, you'd be able to see that there's no layers. I mean, just from traditional 3D printing, you can actually look at it and see the layers with your human eye.
Yeah.
So, just seeing it done. I mean, there's videos online of it being done in 7x speed, but essentially, it's 100 times faster than traditional layer-based, nice. Like 3D printing. And there's a huge possibility that this becomes a way to manufacture pretty much anything, as long as the material can be turned into some sort of like resin form and is affected by UV light. But they might be able to find a similar process with other materials.
Right. Yeah. It said with the strength of aluminum.
Yep.
That's
which
awesome.
Is nice. Insane. Strength.
Yeah, that's yep. That's what planes are made out of is aluminum.
Well, that was one of the examples that he used in the TED Talk. I mean, saying that you were able to make really lightweight materials like for helicopters and planes.
They still had a decent really amount of strength to it.
And one of the things that they were showing was in that TED Talk was a pipe that essentially had a honeycomb matrix in the side of in the middle of it, so it was like a bone. It's very lightweight and extremely powerful, and it was really hard to do with traditional manufacturing.
Yeah, I'd say it's almost impossible from what they showed.
Well, usually they spray in carbon fiber in some of those tubings? And like
I don't know, but I mean, they'd have to do something with it to harden the inside of it, because you definitely couldn't machine a honeycomb pattern through an entire like wing section or something
No. One really good point that was talked about in the TED Talk also was just the fact that you will have a digital thread from design to prototyping to manufacturing. Because at the moment, that's broken between prototyping and manufacturing, or from design and prototyping. Mm-hmm. You can't carry that thread all the way to the end of the production.
This works really great in design, but I have to be able to put a tool in there to, exactly. to do this, and I can't from the
And
way
that's
it's
always
designed.
Been a problem with machinists and engineers. Like
oh, they
the
butt heads
dawn
on
time.
Each other
yeah, exactly.
all the time on that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it works great, but how do I get a wrench in
up?
There?
I mean, like, it's cool, but I can't put it together. Yeah. Like, it's not a real thing until I build it.
Right? It's like, if only I could put this together and then tighten the bolt from the inside, which I can't because it's now put together.
Yeah, and the only thing that limits the length of it is how I... probably how deep the resin pull is, like the plastic, and then mm-hmm. how high that arm can lift, right?
Well, it's not so much the depth, because it's being done in a layer-by-layer basis anyway. It's just kind of continuous. The only reason they're calling it continuous is because traditionally you have to start over and do the whole thing over, right. just because it gets attached to the glass. But since right. they have an oxygen-permeable membrane, the plastic or whatever resin you're using doesn't stick to the glass.
So then they can just yeah.
layer. But, I mean, you're able to make crazy structures with it. I mean, the ball that he that I've seen manufactured online and that and in the TED talk is something that can't be generated even with traditional 3D printing.
No, yeah, no, not 3D
crazy
printing.
Crazy geometric hollow ball
can't be milled with like a CNC machine.
Oh
or
God, no,
like that.
Not at all. God, no.
Like, so literally, there's no way to manufacture it right now, but they could do it with their printer, mm-hmm. and it looks like about what 8 minutes.
Yeah. And nice. I mean, we use, I said this before, but at my company, we use 3D printing a lot. And being able to make a part, like, instantly with no defects is huge.
Oh, yeah.
Like you were saying for the heart, the stent for the heart, mm-hmm. like the arteries.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Creating a custom stint.
On the fly, too. Mm-hmm. Just being able to
and
do
that
it on
could
the
be
fly.
Done, you could do that with kind of anything, really. Yeah. Like casting, for example.
Yeah. Oh,
or
yeah.
a leg.
That's really cool.
That would be really powerful.
That'd yeah, I mean, intense. It could. Mm-hmm. It would definitely speed up the doctor visit. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, it's just honestly incredible, and I think that the possibilities for it are nearly endless.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like you were saying before, John, you're kind of limited, but you have a. I'm guessing it looks around about 10 inches.
It's like
10
a
inches by 8
sheet.
Inches. Yeah, it's a rectangular bath.
I don't see a reason the technology couldn't be scaled either.
No, I think it can be
yeah.
easily.
Oh, yeah.
I think that but I think the as you scale it, the projection system might get more and more complicated.
Would you just need more projectors maybe?
I think you might need more projectors depending on the size of the bath.
Yeah.
Or right. like one very large one, but I feel like smaller.
More powerful.
Yeah, more powerful. I also think you might be limited by weight because generally it's creating a base. That connects the object to the platform.
Yeah.
So if you're making something that's continuous but also like very thick without any sort of honeycomb structure in the center of it, you're going to make it really heavy, then this might not be the technology you want to use. But I feel like if you're not trying to make lightweight equipment or objects, then you would probably end up doing it differently anyway. You'd probably use some sort of kind of metal manufacturing.
Yeah. Right.
You could also attach like a clamp or something that helps hold it to the head
yeah.
so that it would support the weight.
What more. I was thinking is that they could pull it out, construct that base, and then you apply the clamps right after the plastic's already hardened.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then you would create a more rigid structure that
right.
way.
Right.
But I'm guessing the structure that they generate at the base of it is usually pretty strong.
Well, you said there's a video of a guy trying to break it, right?
Yeah, they made an alien skull on the bottom of it, and he was snapping it. And it looked like he had to use a bit of his strength, you know, and it wasn't like his eyes weren't bulging, but, you know.
Did you say he made a stick he tried to break?
No, he made a skull, and then there's a small... But you're thinking of the carbon fiber 3D printer that I was thinking about. So they actually have a carbon fiber 3D printer that has a plastic filament with carbon in the middle of it,
nice.
And then they can actually print carbon fiber objects. And they made a cube of carbon fiber, like a cubic rectangle, and they tried to break it, and it's almost as strong as steel.
Damn.
So
wow, nice.
That's another 3D printer that you should definitely look at if you're interested in it. But being able to print, and that's layered printing, it's not continuous. I don't know how you'd be able to do that, carbon fiber with continuous, but...
Well, there's carbon fiber liquids now in baths.
Yeah. Oh, wow, that's...
Because that's how they coat it. They put it across, like, a surface of water,
mm-hmm.
and then you can dip something through it, and then you dip it and just, like, roll it around in carbon fiber, and that's how they do it.
Wow.
Wow.
If you watch the YouTube videos on how they do that in, like, carbon fiber baths, it has a sheet of carbon fiber over the water, and then the, like, carbon fiber helmet, they'll just, like, dip it in
yeah,
and
I've
swirl it around
that.
And pull it out. and it's like perfect. People carbon fiber their hand. It's like really cool. But I'm just saying, I think there's a possibility you could do it.
Yeah, or at I feel least like the chemistry it. Would be different. Like, yeah. I mean, you'd have to analyze the relationship.
But there's a lot of cool things happening with 3D printers right now.
Oh, yeah. Or so many companies that are interested in 3D. The community has grown so large. I mean, now they have, like, the smallest 3D printer in the world. It's like, I mean, about the size of a box. Like, it's less than a foot. It's very small. Like, it's extraordinarily small. It uses this same process, actually. Oh. which is becoming more and more popular and a lot easier to use, especially since there's technology that makes it continuous as opposed to just being a repeated layered process like any other traditional 3D
printer. And with layers, you run the risk of a weakness in any layer.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And then with continuous, it's probably a lot less likely because it's under the liquid with the oxygen thing that stops it from sticking. But
and you're getting solid structures like an injection mold.
Yeah.
Like you're getting the same quality surface and edges that you would with that kind of thing.
You can't even injection mold that orb, he was saying.
Yeah, you know, you can't even injection mold it. Like, I don't know. I don't know how you would. I can't reason out of way. They're like floating. There'd have to be floating plastic in there essentially, but
it doesn't exactly work super well.
But like once we figure out the whole gravity problem, this this injection mold will work. But
yeah, no, it's crazy.
I really am excited. I think you all should check it out. I think you all should support it because with making production easy, manufacturing easy, you're going to see a lot more interesting products, and we're going to advance other technologies a lot faster.
And other things could like, be cheaper.
Yeah, I mean, just the industry, any industry could benefit from this. Oh, any industry. I can't think of one that you couldn't use it as a prototype. But
or even in manufacture.
I think mass manufacturing, you could do it easily. Because there was in the TED Talk, he was talking about having essentially capturing the heat from these things and then reusing it because they would be manufacturing so fast that it would produce heat.
What did he say? Maybe 1,000 times faster?
1,000 times faster. Right now, they're 25 to 100 times faster.
Yeah.
But 1,000 times faster, that's just incredible. Because then you're turning minutes into seconds.
Right.
Which is
mind-boggling. Even 3D printing a giant part in minutes is damn impressive.
If you could print an entire goddamn plane.
Right. the image that keeps running through my head is like a very thin, wide sheet of this stuff. Like you said, like just on a larger scale of this, and then just like pulling out whole plane wings. And it's like, it would blow my mind to watch that. Just like, that entire plane wing came from a little puddle.
How it's made would become way more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Actually,
oh,
maybe
God.
Not. It would just be a... But just a slow drawn out thing is all you see is just the
time
lapse.
Well, they 3D print it, and
you can't see
the
internals.
We're getting canceled. No one cares anymore because they just 3D print it.
Because they just pull everything out of a giant pile of goo.
I'm sure this is going to have economic impact with jobs and stuff like that. I mean, sorry.
Oh, you need.
But
they need to make it so you still need operators. That way.
Oh, yeah.
Keep the jobs in America.
That's good.
Keep the jobs in
should,
general.
It's not going to be an answer to all problems. You're always going to need a machinist.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
That's just how it
works. You're going to need maintenance people.
Something happens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Somebody to refill the goo dispenser.
Well, it's just going to bring up a different series of occupations. So as opposed to having a mechanic, now you have somebody that works on this.
But luckily, those engineers still exist. You need to be able to design things. That's all I have for this 3D printing segment.
Yeah. No, it is really, really interesting. I'm excited to see just where 3D printing in general goes over the next 10 or 15
years. We've got how old are we?
We've got a ways to go, but it is really exciting.
Well, we got 60 years to see it, is what I'm saying. We got time.
Well, I mean, how long has 3D printing been a thing?
A couple years. Like,
yeah, when was the first 3D printer?
Are you asking
me? I'm just curious.
I don't know.
But it's not that old of a technology, and they've already gone so far.
Yeah. So like I said, see it in
15 years or something. Mm-hmm.
And then with this, they've imagined how to do it, and now other people are going to run with it, and you're just going to see other innovations.
Yeah.
1984.
Community grows.
Wow.
Really?
The technology of the stereolithography was first invented by Charles Hull in 1984.
I mean, they've been using it on electronics for a long time. I mean, that's pretty much how you're making all breadboards, like complicated breadboards at this point. So,
Nice.
It's actually kind of where the microchip came from, was stereolithography.
And that's what one of the things I was saying earlier is that stereolithography is really good at printing things in like a nanoscale. But this is like a more of a microscale kind of process. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean they couldn't design something where you could continuously print a board, like just an entire motherboard for a computer, you know, just
pull it out of goo.
Yep. And done. Slaps in computer.
Well, yeah, because if you can print in conductive material, then you can print circuit boards into anything.
Yeah,
you know?
Pretty much.
You're not limited to shapes and, like,
that's true,
you know,
yeah.
Certain shapes and stuff. Cyborgs.
But, yeah. Cyborgs.
There you go.
T-1000.
Yeah, so pretty soon we're just going to be pulling out whole robots out of this. Just fully functioning.
Nice.
Pass your baby through it.
For people who can't have babies, have a plastic one.
I'd much rather have a plastic baby than a real one.
Me too.
Okay.
All right. So is that everything?
That's everything. Guys
got?
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I apologize first if the lawnmower in the background bothered anybody.
Yeah, they'll get over it.
You could post it on Facebook and Twitter and tell us about it. That'd be nice.
The lawnmower?
Anything. Anything at all.
We can talk about lawnmowers. That's
sure.
Fine. Those are gadgets.
I think there'll be some technology there. About, what model of lawnmower they may or may not have been using.
I'm thinking it was probably the new Honda all-wheel drive.
Okay, Home Depot. Okay, Home Depot.
Like, I have any idea.
Get out of here, John.
It was gas-powered, I can tell you that. That was not the sound of an electric mower.
No, we wouldn't have heard it. Probably was electric.
Where's your electric mower, asshole?
We're recording a podcast.
It's
how
a beautiful lawn. I'm sure his lawn is beautiful.
But right. Yeah, just know we'd love to hear from everybody. Mm-hmm. Say something.
Where do you say something at?
Facebook, Twitter.
The website.
The website, waitingforplayers.net. You can also find us at lazynights.com.
iTunes.
iTunes soon.
We'll be there shortly.
Stitcher now. And I think iTunes Radio now. Or no, not iTunes Radio. TuneIn Radio.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Nice. Very nice.
But that's it for this week. See you guys next week.
Later, everybody.
Later.
Peace.